This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. A five-star showing at home to Luton gives City 3 points and a route back to the top of the table. It's Monday the 15th of April. I'm Amos Murphy.
I'm Ollie McCool.
I'm Bailey Wynn.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
Here for Gundogan! It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Now they have their triple crown.
Yes, gang, how are we? We've got Mr. Wynn for a very winny weekend for Manchester City and, well, not so much their title rivals. Bailey, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I think even better as the Sundays come around and come to a close. And even in our wildest dreams, we didn't expect this to come off, did we?
Absolutely not. I mean, Ollie, if we're talking about weekends that you want to design as a Manchester City fan, I reckon your two closest title rivals both losing at home in matches which, well, for Liverpool, I think it was certainly a banker. For Arsenal, there was a bit of jeopardy there, but Villa playing Thursday night, you'd expect Arsenal to get past them. And as if that isn't good enough, obviously City getting 3 points, but Manchester United, the car crash that is Manchester United, also dropped points away to a lower, lesser opposition. I mean, it's bloody beautiful.
Capture it, remember it. It doesn't get better than this, does it? Really, as a Manchester City fan, you know, we've gone top of the league for the first time in 5 months. All the teams we dislike and have rivalries with or have competition with at the moment, you know, drop points or in case of our title rivals lost, as you say. It's one of those weekends that you just sort of dream of. They don't come along very often when everything just seems to, you know, align perfectly. Pep is truly the mastermind of this league, it feels like at times. He's just sprinkling his magic about everywhere. It's beautiful to see. I love it.
The Hunger Games, the game maker, where he's just like sat there dropping in a little defeat here, dropping in a little, a few bombazos here and there. And Stockport County got promoted as well to the third tier of English football, which, what more could you want? I guess Bayer Leverkusen winning the Bundesliga as well, for those of you who are of continental persuasion. Absolutely fantastic weekend. But I want to take it right back. This is obviously, we're here to review Luton Town. We'll speak more about title race, implications, chances, etc. in part two. But I want to take it back to Saturday afternoon, which feels like a lifetime ago now, doesn't it, Bailey? Where Manchester City go up against Luton Town. They score within 2 minutes on the clock, a truly hilarious goal, it has to be said. And, you know, you're kind of thinking, here we go, at least in the first half, is it going to be a rout? Doesn't quite happen. Somehow, City obviously deserved the 5-1 victory, but a lot of the goals came late on. They end up running out 5-1 winners. And yeah, just quickly, what did you make of the performance?
I think first half, there was a lot of positives, but when you're in this time of the season, everybody's nervous, everybody wants the goals to go in. And you're just focusing on a result, aren't you? But then when we came to the second half, I think those positives we saw in the first half with the runs in behind, with Doku getting isolated against his winger, everything then kind of came to fruition, and the team put the ball in the back of the net, made some ground on a goal difference as well, which I think is quite a positive. Although this weekend, maybe we don't need that anymore.
Oof, you're going early. You're going early. I like it. The confident talk has started. I know, blinking, you miss it. And City, top of the table. But Ollie, look, it would have been easy, wouldn't it? And we spoke about this on the preview show, for City to take this game for granted a little bit. But, I mean, any long-time listeners will know that I'll sniff a defeat for Manchester City out in, I don't know, they could be playing against 12-year-olds and I'd still find a way to think City could lose. However, there was still enough jeopardy to make this interesting, and I think that first half against Luton showed why. Had City not had the rubberest of rubber the greens they've had all season with that opening goal inside 2 minutes, that first half could have been a little bit sketchy at times, considering the chances City were missing.
Yeah, I mean, you got to say 17 shots at half time, and the one goal we scored, well, we didn't even score it. It was so infuriating just seeing them miss chance after chance, because we've seen that game happen so many times, even this season. You know, I saw tweets and people saying it reminded them of Forest away last season, where City were clearly the dominant side. They were clearly on top, and then just at the very end, they chucked it away. Yeah, that first half, it felt like the City we've got used to seeing this season. The second half was the City we've been waiting to see this season almost. They look like a completely changed side. You know, about midway through that second half, it just kind of turned it on from nowhere and took the game away from them, which is exactly what we need to do at this point in the title race. You know, especially before the results today, you know, when you're looking at it, we're third, we're chasing both teams on goal difference. You need to put in wins like this against these lower opposition sides. No disrespect to Luton Town, although I'm sure all of our dads would want masses of disrespect onto Luton Town.
There was plenty of disrespect to Luton Town, I think, throughout the game. I had to drag my father away after full time, so he was stopping, giving abuse to these poor Luton Town fans who had travelled en masse for one of the biggest games in the club's history, and there's a 50-odd-year-old fella hurling abuse at the away end. But I think it's a fair point, isn't it? And I guess sometimes, Bailey, you've got to look at this in the context of the week that City have had and/are in. Obviously, taxing game on Tuesday night away in Madrid. Players who had sort of given everything, limping off Phil Foden, we saw him come off injured. You know, Haaland physically in a battle against the two defenders. You know, that had taken its toll. Kevin De Bruyne, who wasn't able to play because of this reported sickness. So not only had they had that on their sort of physical side of things, but in the back of their mind, they've got, oh God, we've got to do it all again on Wednesday night. And for City to, I felt anyway, control the game, even if the goals didn't come in that first half, was still impressive. However, at the same time, we're kind of speaking about it a bit too often, but the wastefulness in front of goal is becoming a tiny, tiny problem. Sounds mad to say it when you win 5-1, but we've seen it before.
Yeah, we've seen it throughout the season. And the other thing we've seen throughout the season is this City side do create chances, and they do control the game, but they do struggle when it comes to the finishing. And then if we're looking at the other title rivals that we've seen this weekend, we can speak about sides that don't control the game, but do create a lot of chances. We could talk about Arsenal that do control the game, but then struggle to create the chances, whereas City seem to have found that balance between the two. We've just been waiting the season for them to get their shooting boots on and put it in the back of the net. And as we saw in the first half, like Ollie said, they're in the right position. They were creating enough. You look at the chances that Mateus Nunes had, really good chances to score two goals in that half, but it's the second half where they took the game by the scruff of their neck and made sure that we didn't have to bring in the players that we wanted to rest.
Yeah, that's an important part as well. Obviously, Jack Grealish, Rodri and Phil Foden didn't get on the pitch at all, which is fantastic for City because it means they've had a full 90 minutes rest. And we've kind of seen that either side of the Madrid game now, where, you know, handpicked a couple of players would play in one game, a couple of players would play in the other game, and Pep seems to have done a decent job. I don't know why I'm saying it like it's a surprise. He's a seasoned professional in this sort of title race running scenario, but he's done a very good job, I reckon, and the backroom staff, of course, of just making sure everyone's fit and firing. Ollie, I want to pick up on one of the sort of major personnel talking points from that game. Obviously, Matheus Nunes came into the team and he was at fault for the Luton goal in the second half. A little bit sloppy, trying to maybe force the ball a bit too much. But I guess sometimes you get that when you've got a primarily attacking-minded midfielder in his own sort of 18-yard box, final third area. They're going to take risks, and sometimes there's places to take risks, sometimes there isn't, and that was one of them. But on the whole, I thought he had a great game, to be honest. I thought he was here, he was there, he was everywhere, and he's not going to be the quality of Phil Foden or Kevin De Bruyne, but he was certainly gluing that midfield and attack together at times. But as has been the case often with Manchester City midfielders, you and I have come to blows once or twice over a couple of them before as well. He seems to have divided opinion a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm quite glad we're on the same page about this one. I like Matheus Nunes. I really like him.
It's that meme, isn't it? The two gangs is, I can't forget what state it is in, but the sort of the holding the handkerchief together. This is what we're like now.
Exactly. I mean, it is a bit like that. But no, I really like Matheus Nunes. I like the signing when we signed him. I thought at first he'd be kind of playing a bit deeper. And we'd see him more like how Kovacic has operated when he's come in, especially, you know, especially in recent weeks where he's dropped back and always been a centre-back at times with and without Rodri. But yeah, I think he's done fine. You know, we all know City attackers especially take a year. You know, defenders, they can come in and be impactful from minute one, but attackers, there is always, you give them their first year and then you see what they're really like. And I think it's going to be like that with Matheus Nunes. We didn't buy him to be a 50-game-a-season player. We bought him to be a 30-game-a-season player. We bought him because there were options that we wanted ahead of him and couldn't get, but we still needed a midfielder. You know, and we can say, well, he's only started, what, I think 7 or 8 Premier League games. You know, he's not had a great run of it, but at the same time, I don't think he's... That goal is the first time I've really had it kind of remembered a mistake badly. But even then, it's 3-1 and we won the game 5-1. It's not the end of the world. It shouldn't be a damnation on his Manchester City career, you know, months into it. I think we're looking at a player who can be serviceable for Manchester City for a few years. And we'll probably sell him on for a big fee. Or, you know, if he develops and turns into the world beater like Pep predicted he would be a couple of years ago, then it's either way, I don't think this is going to be a bad signing. And I don't think he's been a bad signing. He's impressed when he's needed to impress. I would like a little bit more output, but I think we could say that from pretty much every Manchester City player, apart from Phil Foden this season and Erling Haaland, obviously. Well, yeah, I thought it was...
You say that.
Well, I mean, it depends what view you take on it. I'm sure we'll talk about that at some point. But I just... He's 6-7 out of 10 every time he plays. And I don't think that's a bad thing for a Manchester City attacker in his first season. You know, the big test will be, you know, this time next season, is he getting into the squad in, you know, in the Champions League quarterfinals? Is he getting into the squad against, you know, the likes of, you know, United, Liverpool, Arsenal, Tottenham, Chelsea. And now I guess we could include Newcastle and Villa in those, in that sort of category as well. I think he's got the talent to do it. I think he's got the ability to do it. It's just, you know, you've got to cut out some of that rashness in front of goal and some of that rashness in his own box. And, you know, I think some of the kind of acting almost that we see from him at times, he's one for a dramatic foul for certain. If he can cut that those sort of elements out of his game, I think he'll be a perfectly fine, if not very good, Manchester City midfielder.
Bailey, I mean, I guess you sort of echo similar sentiments, really. But with the mistake that leads to the goal, I guess you could say he's trying to do the right thing. He's trying to get the ball turned over fast enough so City can counter-attack. And you've got to remember as well, City were after goals to boost the goal difference. I think it's, given the results this weekend, they're above Liverpool and then maybe 4 behind Arsenal. So, you know, he was right to sort of push. He just got a little bit wrong.
Yeah, whether it was a poor touch or that he just thought he had enough space to be able to drive up the midfield, I think the best lesson for these players is to make that mistakes in a high-stakes game where it does have an impact. And we saw the difference it made with Phil Foden when he gave away the penalty against Crystal Palace. And now we see the impact of him coming deeper in midfield, not making mistakes, being very careful on the ball, and also contributing in his own box. There's quite a few times he makes really good headers to clear the ball. But back to Nunes, I think for me, when you were looking at him early in the season, the ball carrying was kind of like everything that people saw about him. It was his entire game. Whereas in this game, for me, it seemed more like that was a tool that he could use, but he was a lot more calm and composed on the ball, wasn't dwelling on it too much, would move it along if he didn't need it. He was able to swap out with Alvarez and Rico on the right-hand side, provide the width. So he had a better understanding of his position and his role in the side. And then, as Ollie mentioned, for me, it's not an attacking midfielder that he's going to be. It's going to be more of a box-to-box midfielder. It's more about working within a pair. He's not going to have the be like the very dominant defensive midfielder within that pair. And he's also not going to be completely as a 10 in that pair and be completely kind of creative. But he is a link. He is somebody that can carry the ball through the midfield very well. But it's his decision-making that's kind of held him back from accessing all these abilities that he does have on the ball.
Do you think he can do that role next to Rodri Bailey? As in, I'm trying to think of the best example, because I guess so far this season we've primarily seen a bit more of an advanced player in Phil Foden, at times Julian Alvarez and obviously Kevin De Bruyne, but he is ever so slightly, I guess, more defensively minded than those guys who are kind of pure attackers in that sense. But I can see it working. Maybe not in the biggest of games. Like, I'm not saying Champions League quarterfinal on Wednesday, stick him in there, jobs are good and every problem City have is solved. But you could possibly see him getting an extra 15 appearances next season by maybe just taking the workload off Rodri a little bit in those sort of fixtures.
Yeah, I think it's having the trust of Guardiola at the start of the season. So if you go back to some of these early Champions League games, these early cup games that he wasn't put in the starting lineup, he would do now, I would think, or he'd at least get a bit more opportunity to do so. And when he was away with Portugal, he played in a three-man midfield of himself, Bruno Fernandes and João Paulinho. So you can see that's the composition of the midfield. You would have Foden would be more like how Fernandes would play in that midfield. Mm. Rodri would see you have a bit more of a defensive, kind of deeper role in the build-up and picking up the spaces in behind. So I think for Nunes, it's getting a trust of Guardiola that we've seen. We've seen in this game a better player on the ball with his decision-making. And then now next season, I think it's just removing these expectations of him being Jude Bellingham right away and just letting him get more minutes and get comfortable in the side. He could be a very valuable squad player for us rather than us thinking he has to be a starter that is just as influential as Gundogan was.
Yeah, I mean, if he gets that moaning up, then he'll be just as good as Jude Bellingham in that aspect, as we saw on Tuesday night. Ollie, I guess the other sort of new signing we can speak about from this game is Jeremy Doku. And before the game, I wanted him in the starting 11, thought, you know, he'd maybe fare well against Luton's. Not so much, well, this was before the fact. I didn't expect them to be playing 11 men inside their own 18-yard box, essentially. That's what played out. And then suddenly you're thinking, oh, is this the game Jeremy Doku's suited to? You know, it's a lot of touches. It's a lot of patience. There's not a lot of space to be running in. You beat your first man. Suddenly you're met with a fullback who's just as deep and you've got to get past them as well, as we saw him do in the second half. But I thought he did, well, fantastic, to be fair. It wasn't his type of game, but he still helped tick City's attack over. Almost Jack Grealish-esque, and you can tell maybe they've been working together and they've been learning a couple of things off each other.
Yeah, I mean, Luton have had a lot of credit for, I think, the way they've kind of approached this season. I don't think it's just because, you know, Rob Edwards' football is McDreamy. I think it's because he is quite a useful tactical manager. But it's almost sad that he reverted to just putting a left man behind the ball here. Because I agree, I think it would have been, if it was more what we would expect from Luton, I think Doku would have absolutely feasted in this game. And he did really, really well to come out with it, to come out of this 90 minutes with a goal and assist, albeit, yes, in stoppage time when the game was already done. But he was impressive. He looked like he had his head up for a lot more in this game. You know, he looked really positive. And I think you're right. You know, maybe him and Grealish are working a little bit closer together. Maybe, you know, the coaches are saying you could learn this off Jack, and Jack, you could actually learn some things off Doku here about, because we've seen Jack be a bit more progressive in his last few games since he's come back from injury as well. But yeah, I think the thing with Doku is that we don't, you know, we know what he's capable of. You know, we saw his brilliance earlier in the season. We've seen the flashes of it. It's just, can that become more consistent? You know, he had a great game against Villa You know, especially playing on the right hand side. We've seen him switch over a couple of times. You know, there was times when Rico Lewis was the high and wide guy, you know, which we, in a role that we've seen Kyle Walker play relatively differently this season. And then we saw Doku switch over. So it's good to know that he's got that capability and versatility in him. But it's really good and really encouraging to see him actually have a performance where no one can actually turn around and say, I'm not sure about him. Because, you know, I think this was a game for the new signings to really kind of impress. Mm-hmm. They've all kind of, mm-hmm. you know, all seen a boost in their rep here. And Doku, I think the thing is, we were told when we signed him, you got to look at the potential. You got to look at the upside here. And I think we're slowly starting to see it benefit us. Yes, it's not in the biggest of games. Yes, it's not, you know, the biggest of stages. Yeah. But yeah. These are the games that win you Guardiola's trust. This is the thing. These are the games that will win you Guardiola's trust for the next season. You know, he knows he's not going to be playing Doku, you know, against Real Madrid on Wednesday, or at least we hope not.
Yeah.
I hope not. But the thing is, if he can have these performances, you know, in games like this, in games probably like the FA Cup semi-final on the weekend, and in, you know, against West Ham coming up or something like that, then that's going to be really important for him and his progression going forward this season, next season.
Yeah, completely. Yeah,
really good game from Doku. Really, really happy with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the other new signing, well, two new signings that we spoke about, Kovacic, I guess he's had his flowers and we know he can do that sort of thingy, that sort of performance. So we won't sort of lay on him too much, but Guardiola Bailey, just finally before the break, he's turning into, well, I think he's obviously already been a sensational player, but taken quite a bit of undeserved stick, playing in a position that isn't necessarily best suited to him out on that. Well, it is. I'm getting myself worked up here, but I think it's well suited to him, but it's maybe not his best position, maybe not his long-term position, but he's taken stick because people see him as the centre-back and they want him to play there. And he's had one or two mistakes that might have led to goals. But quietly, I think, Bailey, he's having an unbelievable campaign. And I don't know if you can be underrated at 80 million or whatever it was, but in terms of performances, he's definitely going under the radar.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. He's absolutely going under the radar. And I think also, if you look at the signings of the season that people talk about, it's always about who makes the impact early on. And now we're getting towards the business end of the season. That's when Guardiola's really coming through and sticking out. And when you said about the best role for him, playing him on this left-hand side gives him all the options to go forward. He has the passing ability to fire the ball into Foden, into the midfield. We saw in this game that he could hit Doku really early. Both the penalty and the goal that Doku scored came from Guardiola getting the ball and fizzing it right in as quick as he can, giving him loads of space. You've seen the benefit he's have on Phil Foden playing on that side, knowing he can come inside. You've seen the benefit for Jack Grealish as well, having that person there. And then in these last two games, you've seen him drift inside to that midfield, come to the edge of the box and show that he doesn't really have a weak foot, does he? So I think it's only up for Guardiola. I think next season you're going to see him probably in the top 10 for the most minutes in the squad. And I think it's going to be very exciting to see how he progresses under Guardiola these next few years.
Yeah, I do. I love him on that left-hand side. I think it sort of opens up a lot of options for City. The only thing you'd maybe criticise him for in that aspect is can get a little bit isolated at times, which is not necessarily his fault. I think the way City have played has left those wide areas open. When you have Nathan Ake there, he's obviously a supreme 1v1 defender. Guardiola, not so much, but you get the upside in terms of his attacking ability. And yeah, he's turned into an absolute goal machine, which is it's a fascinating arc, it has to be said. And you said you'll think he'll be in the top 10 minutes next season. He's 11th at the moment, mm-hmm. so could still make it this year. We'll have to wait and see. It'll be interesting to see now Nathan Ake's back, which one of those is the go-to guy, because at the moment, I don't think you can drop Guardiola. Listeners, that'll do for part one. Stay exactly where you are. In part two, we will obviously revel in some of the demises of the red teams over the weekend.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. Let's turn attention to the title race, because I'm sure we could still speak about Rico Lewis, maybe Julian Alvarez's deficiencies, Erling Haaland's goal scoring. But this weekend was all about the teams that City weren't playing, in fact, the rivals in the title race. Ollie, let's start with Liverpool. They obviously struggled a little bit against Manchester United. It's fair to say, something like 45 shots and just the two goals at Old Trafford. Midweek, absolute disaster. In my head, though, I was thinking, okay, they've had a wobble. They'll go into the weekend. Crystal Palace at home can be a tricky fixture, but this is an opportunity to put that to bed. By God, were we wrong?
What they could do with someone like Josco Guardiola or Rico Lewis in their back line at the moment. Oh my God. There's just something really joyous about when you just expect, you know, a team you're up against for the title, when you just expect them to win completely routinely, no problems. I think we were all thinking after they lost 3-0 to Atalanta in midweek, you're thinking, oh, they're going to turn it on here. They'll put up a good result, put up a good fight and show what they're made of. And they just didn't. I mean, they just looked. I think they've almost threatened this all season. You know, what is it? They've, you know, been had to come from behind in what, 21 of their 32 Premier League games this season. That is not the record of a title winning side. That is not the record of a side who can be seriously considered for title ambitions. So it's pretty amazing that they've managed to do it and managed to keep up with it and lead the league for quite a lot of the time. But oh, it was just so enjoyable. And from a guy who City targeted in the summer as well, in Eberechi Eze. Maybe he's just saying, look, don't forget about me, lads. I'm here. I can score against Liverpool, especially at Anfield. I think that's the big thing, it being at Anfield as well. That will hurt them. That will really, really hurt them. 28 game unbeaten run they had there in the Premier League. I mean, it's nothing on our 41 games unbeaten or whatever it is for City. But
it's interesting you say that, because they've got in the next four, all of them are away. That obviously includes the second leg against Atalanta, but they've got three Premier League games away from home. And Bailey, I mean, it's kind of felt like it was coming from Liverpool. This, I'm maybe not going to call it capitulation just yet, because they're only 2 points off the top, and who knows what could happen from here on in. But they have been riding that momentum wave since Jurgen Klopp said that he was going to leave, in my eyes, a little bit too much. I think of the Nottingham Forest result as the perfect example of that. They scored in like the 99th minute, whatever it was, Darwin Nunez header. And it's felt like slowly but surely, there's that gif, isn't there, where that car is sort of, the wheels start coming off and the steering wheel breaks and the door falls. It's felt a little bit like that the last few weeks. And now the results are showing it.
Yeah, I think everybody could pick out a few different results of Liverpool this year where you feel like, how did they win that game? Was it McAllister shooting from the edge of the box and scoring a world-class goal? That was quite likely for quite a few games. And it was actually the Crystal Palace one. They won away 2-1 earlier in this season where, for me, it was most likely should have been a draw, but they managed to scrape through. And then you saw quite a few results after that where they were, like you said, they just managed to find a way.
There was one against Fulham, wasn't there? Were they two goals down off, or certainly one goal down, and suddenly you blink your eye.
Fulham, in my mind, played quite a good game, and I was quite impressed on how they did, given that was at Anfield as well. So, yeah, I think they've been riding that wave, and you have to question, if your manager has said they're leaving at the end of the summer, then obviously they don't have all the energy and everything they want to be able to give towards you, do they? Because they're going, because they are burnt out. Mm. So you're always kind of running through that thread, getting it close. And it looks like to me they've fallen off too early. And the question now is, do you roll the dice at Atalanta, try and put out a really strong team there and turn it around. Because if that fails, then that's only going to smash the confidence even further, isn't it?
I wouldn't be surprised if in 2 weeks' time we speak about Liverpool as an afterthought in this title race. Equally, given the way they've been under Klopp and given the way they've been as their sort of club as a history, I wouldn't be surprised if in 2 weeks' time the back top of the table, such has been this season, such has been the sort of the juju they've had around that club. But it'll be interesting to see. I wanted to quickly move on to Arsenal though before we sort of speak about City's title hopes as a whole. Ollie, Arsenal, I think they've been on a level the best team so far this season, sort of pound for pound in terms of quality, in terms of balance, in terms of consistency. Are they the best team? Obviously not. I think we can all agree City are better than them. But in terms of, you know, what is it, 32 games we've played so far this season, you'd say fair enough, Arsenal have probably been the best team. However, it's weird to say it, but with Arsenal, their deficiency seems to be in the head. And you could see it in the game against Aston Villa, 60 minutes in, the crowd starts going nervy, the players start looking around thinking, oh my God, what do we do here? We played really well. Touch wood, maybe it does come true, maybe it doesn't. They just don't seem to have that extra 1% in title races to get over the line yet.
I've said it time and time and time again to literally anyone who will listen at this point. Arsenal are just, they're still too emotional. They're still, they don't have, you know, they don't have it up here. And I don't know whether it's Arteta and the fact that he's just a bit, he's, this is going to sound really harsh, but the best comparison I've got for Mikel Arteta is,
this could go anywhere,
is Rishi Sunak. And
better
right,
than I thought.
And let me explain this. Let me explain this. One of the biggest criticisms Sunak gets is that he's a micromanager. He's obsessed about details and that he so believes that he's right in what he says that no one else can question him. And Arteta, from what we've seen in the documentary, in post-match press conferences and interviews, he's the exact same. He's obsessed with details. He's obsessed with micromanaging every aspect of his football team. Mm. And he just doesn't have that sort of ability like Pep does, for example, to know when to delegate, to know when to take a step back, to know when to, this is actually not something I need to care about too much. I think a perfect example of this season is the goalkeeper issue. You know, he immediately at the start of the summer destabilized his goalkeeping situation. I'm not saying Ramsdale was 100% deserving of Arsenal's number one.
The way he did it though was, we don't want to go too early, but it could be a case of that's one of the things that doesn't, that sort of stops Arsenal's title challenge, and just the way he handled it.
100%. I think there's probably members of that squad who lost a little bit of respect for him. I don't think they've lost respect entirely, but I think that's a situation where you think, oh, you're not as kind of genuine and you don't have as much dignity as I thought and integrity as I thought you did. And I feel that way about Arteta a lot. I just see this guy who's utterly obsessed with the details and misses the bigger picture a lot of the time. I don't think he's got that emotional strength to lead a team like Pep Guardiola does, like we've seen Jurgen Klopp do. You know, Jurgen Klopp, for all his faults and about being, you know, a touchline menace and, you know, going after the referees, he knows that he doesn't dig his team out at the end of the day. He looks for other excuses, and we don't see Arteta do that. He digs his team out. He calls his team out a lot. And I don't think that's the right thing to do. You know, Pep Guardiola didn't do it for 7 years. And then the day he did it against Spurs last season after that game at home, it had the intended effect. I don't want to say I'm proven right.
With Arteta, I reckon, is the fact that he doesn't necessarily know how to delegate his passion, because everything seems to be just, it's either the best in the world or it's either the worst in the world or it's either the biggest corruption or it's either the greatest achievement. And Bailey, I guess we can bring City into this now as well, because I'm wary of time and I do want to sort of talk on City's title chances. But the one thing, and we've said it all along, even when City were playing badly, the one thing City have over these teams is they've been there and done it. And even though four new players have come in, a couple of players have come out, that almost Real Madrid-esque mentality and aura, obviously they have it in the Champions League, City is slowly but surely getting it in the Premier League. It counts for a lot, and it counts for more than I think people can really give a sort of a tangible credit to.
Yeah, and I think we got a good reminder of that recently in the documentary, really. It is the team culture and it is the mentality of these players. And Guardiola has helped build that. And then the players themselves continue to kind of build that even further. You see the way that Rodri speaks, you see the way that Ruben Diaz speaks. There's no need for Guardiola to come in and say anything on that front. So within that group, you have such a strong mentality. And one thing that really sticks out to me when we're talking about Arsenal is when Pep Guardiola said this a few years ago, he said, you have to play football with courage. And you see that in the City teams every time they play, whether that's Rico at 17 playing, inverting into the midfield against a big six side, or whether that's Haaland laughing off having to do duels with Rudiger and continue to go and go and go again and again and again. You look at the Arsenal game today, you saw players that were tense, that could feel the pressure, were worried. They knew that how bad a draw was going to be. And then you look at the City side that don't worry about that. They just get on with the game. You see John Stones get asked about the next game by Rice, and he's like, oh, I didn't even know we had a game. You know, he genuinely doesn't even know. He's just worried about what's going on in front of him. And City are going to continue to do that. And I think that's the edge we have at the moment. And it is yet to be seen whether Arsenal will bridge that gap.
There was a great scene in that documentary. It's just come to me. I think it was in between the Real Madrid games last year and City played Everton, and Pep saying something like, I'm not allowing you to think about Real Madrid, or something along those lines. Like, tomorrow we can think about Real Madrid. And it's simple, but it's effective. Ollie, this is how it stands at the moment. I'm sure listeners have already ingrained it into the brain. They know every single fixture, the kickoff times, and who plays first, who goes where and when. But at the moment, as things stand, Liverpool third, played 32. In fact, all teams have played 32, so that's irrelevant at this point. All you need to know is that there are six games left to play for all teams. Liverpool third, they've got 71 points. Arsenal level, they've got 71 points as well, but a goal difference swing of +8. City have got four goals. The goal difference is -4 to Arsenal, but crucially, they're 2 points clear. Is there a small chance that City could maybe possibly run away with this title now? Or is that far too early?
Yeah, I think it's too early to say that. I think that's only, especially, you know, with the fact that we've got the FA Cup semi-final, that's going to change games played a little bit, what impact that could have. But
possibly for the better.
Yeah,
we've seen it before.
Exactly.
I think teams have this chance to sort of get a step up.
I think, you know, I mean, a couple of weeks ago I was, you know, berated in our group chat for saying, oh, it's done. And whether that was an emotional reaction or not, I still don't really care. Cause it felt over. City at times haven't been, City haven't been good enough to win this title at times. I don't think every team has, that's the weird thing.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
Not one of these three teams is champions elect yet.
No, I don't think so. But on the basis of City have won it through, you know, the last three seasons, they've won, you know, five of the last six. You know, they've been there before. They know how to do it. This squad there's just something about them. And I don't want to use the word aura. I don't want to use, you know, magic or anything like this. There is just something about this team. They're just born to win and born to just be a bit more ruthless than everyone else. And we've seen that at times. You know, we've seen how fast City can just turn it on in games. The football intelligence of these players is just magnificent. And, you know, when you've got the best manager to ever do it in your dugout, then, you know, that's just an advantage that no other team can ever get close to. And we've seen that proven time and time again, you know, many seasons.
Yeah,
I think, you know, City have just got, they've just got to settle themselves. You know, I don't think the players, if they were watching that game all together at the CFA today, yesterday, I don't think they're going to be sat around thinking, okay, it's ours now. It's absolutely ours. Let's just, you know, we can chill a little bit. No, they're going to be thinking, right, we've just got to go game by game here, game by game. Real Madrid, then the FA Cup, and then we're back into it with the Premier League. And something special could happen again this season. Something really, really special could happen. And it's a testament to all of these players that despite all the problems we've had this season, they've managed to get themselves into a position where we're in the middle of April, we're on the hunt for three trophies. You know, we've got a great chance to go through in the Champions League. We've got a great chance to, you know, return to Wembley in the FA Cup. And we've got a great chance to preserve our position at the top of the Premier League table. Just say that again. Manchester City are top of the Premier League table for the first time in a very long time. You know, maybe they give it up because of the schedule, but, you know, it's not going to be a shock to anyone if they're holding the title again come the end of May. And yeah. I think we're all going to really, really enjoy it if it happens. And no one can say they don't deserve it, because if you're going to flap to teams like Crystal Palace, teams like Aston Villa, then, you know, you've got what you came for.
City have famously flapped against both those teams this season, which is funny, actually. But I guess not every team can draw 2-2 at home to Crystal Palace. These levels to this. Bailey, I just want to sort of put it into context a little bit, because I think I'm right in saying Liverpool and Arsenal play twice before City next play in the Premier League, which could be a blessing, it could be a disguise. Arsenal have got Wolves away and they've got Chelsea at home. So we're absolutely madness to say it, but Wolves is the most difficult fixture there. Liverpool, it's Fulham and then it's Everton in the Merseyside derby for them. Look, it could be one of those cases where you blink and you miss it and suddenly City are 5 points clear, and then everybody's saying it's the most predictable title race again. How boring is it? The Bundesligafication of the Premier League. Could be that both of them teams win 6 out of 6 and suddenly City are on the back foot. I think what's important in my mind anyway to sort of state is Arsenal, Liverpool they've dropped a serve. They've not necessarily lost the tie or even lost the match.
Yeah, but I think, you know, we learned today that a home game for an Arsenal team that was arguably the best of 2024, they failed. When it came to Liverpool winning at home at Anfield, bouncing back from the Atalanta result, which you would think that Klopp would have them fired up for that game. You'd think the crowd would be fired up for that game. You'd think there's no way they could put in a bad performance for that, because they've just seen the impact of what happened against Atalanta. They were soundly beat, Klopp said it, and they still got beat again. So when it comes to City, for me, it's the fact that they've got 12 games to go. You asked for the opportunity to do the treble again. Now you just need to take it one game at a time. Don't worry about anybody else. Just worry about yourself. And I think, especially for this FA Cup weekend, this has been a really good result for us, because it means going into that Chelsea game, you don't need to worry about who's playing and who wins. You know, if you win your games, you're still top of the Premier League. So just focus on Chelsea, go to Wembley and put in a good performance.
Yeah, and to continue the cross-sport references, for any road cycling fans, it feels like it's starting to bunch up for a sprint finish, and hopefully City have got the best lead-out train. Ollie, thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed. How good does it feel to have it back in our hands again? Perfect weekend. Absolutely perfect. Who can complain? Yeah. Not even me.
You could say this is how you could say this is how it feels to be City. Bailey, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on. And as Rodri said, if you want to win the Premier League, you have to grab it like this.
Yeah, there we go. Look at this, listeners. How many more references do you want? That'll do for today. We'll be back, of course, as usual, Monday through to Friday. God, Real Madrid, just 2 days away. That'll be a good one. If you enjoyed it, please hit follow, hit subscribe. All of our bios, as per usual, are in the description of this podcast. Until next time, it's been a pleasure, and we'll see you later. Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end-of-season run-in with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial run-in, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.